Well, I want to thank Gene for the prayer mentioning me. I need all the help I can get. We could sing everything again because this may not be as long as you're used to. So some of you, if you're going to nap, you better nap in double time. You won't sleep as much as usual. And the last thing I'll have to say is this is the first Sunday night since we've gone back on standard time. So it's going to be dark when you go out there tonight. I just hope you're not in the dark about the things I've had to say. During the past few weeks, we've been studying the book of Revelation in our Bible classes on Sunday mornings and Wednesday evenings. We've dissected the seven churches that received the letters, and we've discovered the strengths and weaknesses that each one possessed. To no one's surprise, the churches suffered from a number of difficulties that were mixed in with some successes that they experienced as well. More importantly, the problems and weaknesses that they met, those that were exhibited can still be found in our churches today. And I suppose the sad part of that is that they were new to their religion. And because of that, it was far more difficult for them to foresee the possible pitfalls that were there and the places that they might falter than it would be for us. On the other hand, we have 2,000 years of experience to really deal with our beliefs. We can bear witness to the written word that is there for us to read, the documents of caution against the missteps that were taken in the past. Unfortunately, the old axiom that if you do not pay heed to the mistakes made in history, you're bound to repeat them, kind of rings down through the hallways to us. Sometimes also, I think, our own humanness, and that's a new word, humanness, I think stands in the way of being the Christians we should be. I'm not here to point fingers at any of us because I possess so many weaknesses of my own that if I did so, it would probably condemn me. I do hope, however, to examine the responsibilities that we each shoulder to make our church the best we possibly can. We will talk about responsibilities that we as individuals face as well as requirements of the church, all of which depend upon us as individuals working as a cohesive unit. Now, we should remember the old adage that a chain is no stronger than its weakest link. And if we apply that thought to our church, we must all resolve to be strong. One advantage we have is the ability to work with and strengthen one another. I think we can help each link and through our interdependence become stronger and stronger. In order to accomplish greater strength, we must identify and discuss various responsibilities that we each have. And we as all Christians all possess a number of these responsibilities. By doing so, we can become stronger and stronger each day. And in an attempt to do so, I'm calling this lesson Brooksville's Checklist. Is this thing on? Yeah. No, it's not. Or I did something wrong. Let's go that way. Whoops, let's go back one. I'm on it now. Okay, Brooksville's Checklist. A number of things I want us to talk about that I think that really we should all know. What I have to say this evening will not come as a surprise or seem novel to any of you. We'll be dealing with the basics with which we are all familiar. Also, since Kent tells me I have only 4 hours to present this lesson, I may not cover every responsibility we face, but I hope we will all might deal in a bit of self-examination, if you will, to see what we feel and do well, and also to examine maybe the things in our lives at which we need to improve. The logical conclusion is very simple, and that is if we strengthen ourselves as individuals, we strengthen the church as a whole. And isn't that really why we're here? For both? Okay. Let's start with an obvious responsibility. We're to attend church regularly. Now, I'm sure that doesn't come as a shock to anyone. But you notice there are a lot fewer of us here tonight than there were earlier today. Anyhow, Matthew. Come on, Matthew. Well, that's going pretty good. We may be doing away with this. Matthew 18:20 on page 1133 quotes Jesus, who says, "For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there in the midst of them." Now, this shouldn't take much explanation. You've all heard this before. I know it might be difficult for any of us to actually picture Jesus sitting beside you here in church, but I think the statement stands on its own, and it's not hard to understand at all. There we go. Hebrews, this is going to be fun. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25 on page 1381 follows this up by saying, "Let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, so much the more as you see the day approaching." Now, this passage obviously shows an active role on our part if we are to be successful in our attendance. When I read this particular verse, I always think of the old adage that we should be standing on the promises and not sitting on the premises. And I think that's important to think about that. Okay? It's important to understand this is an active kind of thing, attending church regularly. It's not just going there and sitting there. Many people say, "Well, I attend service every day, and that's all well and good." But again, let's talk about if we take an active role. Do you visit with other members? Do you greet visitors? Do you visit with the members before and afterwards? And when I ask these questions, I'm pointing a finger at me because I'm really bad about that. I'm probably a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10 as far as dealing with visitors. Now, I don't know if you've heard this rumor or not, but there's a rumor that there's a lady in Texas that I know. And when I visit out there, I've had to be more forthcoming and introducing myself to people and all that kind of thing. And of course, I'm getting kind of the, you know, the careful eye looking me over. But in turn, it's kind of cool to see people coming up to me as a visitor, and makes me think about really how poorly I do on that same situation as far as just greeting visitors and spending time with them. All right, let's go forward. If you feel as you do a good job attending church, and congratulations. Now, ready for the next one. Do you study the Bible daily? Hopefully most of us do that, you know. But let's go on with that. On page, or let's not. All right, 2 Timothy 2:15 on page 1367. All these pages are obviously in your pew Bibles. It says, "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." I think that's pretty much a straightforward statement as well. If we add 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17 on page 1368, it says, "All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work." Now, I think here you have an exhortation not only to read the Bible, but to study it as well. And like textbooks you may have had when you were in school. Everybody remember textbooks? Some of the younger ones might not, but we know what they were. But anyway, just reading the words quickly is not enough, is it? Much of the Bible, Kent says it's easy to understand, and I'm sorry to tell him he's wrong, but much of the Bible is not light reading. It's often a culmination of thoughts and underlying meanings that don't jump out off the page at you. And often you'll be hit with a new thought as you mull over what you've read. And rereading and pondering the meanings put forth can open up new insights you may not have had before. I'm sure, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm sure a number of you have read passages with which you're familiar and which you've read a number of times, and all of a sudden a new thought comes in. Or maybe suddenly it meshes with another passage that you've read in the Bible. And that doesn't come about by just kind of saying, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm going to read 1 Timothy today," or whatever it might be. And so the studying part, and I don't mean like you're studying for a test exactly, although I guess we could say there might be a test someday, right? But, you know, it requires some extra effort, and that's all I'm trying to say. Now, let's just say you're telling me, "Oh yeah, I do both of those things really well. You're ready to move on to a new responsibility. Let's see if we can find another one. Help others learn the gospel. Sounds pretty easy. How do you get this thing to work right every time, Kent? I don't know. All right. If we go to Acts 8:4 on page 1262, it says, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. Now, we got to take that in historical perspective. Because in Acts, you know, there's a whole lot of action, for lack of a better way of putting it, that went on. And if you were spreading the word back then, you were going by foot. You know, if you went 10 miles, that was a trek. And maybe you spent several days or a couple of weeks there getting a few people together and teaching and then moving on. Now, what we're talking about with us is a little different. Our responsibility may not stretch to that extent, but we need to prepare to teach the gospel to those that we encounter. By this, I don't mean that you buttonhole anyone and everyone that you run into, but also, I am saying, don't shy away from opportunities that may present themselves from time to time. Naturally, it will be difficult to preach the gospel if we have little knowledge of the Bible. Taking part in this third responsibility of helping others works much better if you've fulfilled responsibility number two, which of course has to do with reading the Bible. They go hand in hand, don't they? Proverbs. Oops, here we go again. First time. Proverbs 11:30 on page 737. It hammers the point home. It says, the fruit of the righteous is the tree of life, and he who wins souls is wise. That's a pretty deep statement. It surely covers the symbolism, if you will, of the tree of life, while showing the wisdom and helping others to learn. What better combination could really ask for than that? We should also be aware that teaching can be most rewarding. Seeing the eyes of someone as they comprehend new things or a different viewpoint that makes sense to them that they had never done before can do wonders for both the student and the teacher. Now, I know there are a couple ex-teachers in there, especially you that taught younger kids. You see them light up when suddenly they learn something. It just kind of strikes, all right? So, think back, if you will, to teachers you had. Teachers in school, really the good ones, who opened your eyes to new things, to thoughts maybe that had never made sense before until suddenly everything gelled together. And I think we can all go back and remember that. Even I can, and I wasn't really. Nobody said I was going to be a Rhodes Scholar, okay? It's really a truly wonderful feeling, though, when that happens. In religion, we can even consider the look of wonder in a child's eyes as new perspectives come into focus. And we can use child here in more than one way, not just people who are young, but people who are young really in their belief. And what a wonderful sensation that could be. And as we consider responsibilities, there's one that we may overlook. I won't overlook it if it comes. To disciple other church members. Now, here's what I'm getting at here. I think we often forget that we can positively influence those with whom we worship. Growing in our knowledge of the gospel may be helped by sharing ourselves with fellow believers. If we go to Ephesians 4:15-16, page 1345, it says, but speaking the truth in love may grow up in all things into him who is ahead, Christ. Gets deep now. From whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joining supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. And aren't we talking about the growth of the body here when we're talking about our church? Now, this is just my personal opinion now, but I wonder if we don't spend so much time sometimes thinking of those outside of our membership whom we would like to help, we fail to consider our own. If we're a body, don't we want to keep all of it strong? Or if we're a chain, like I alluded to earlier, again, don't we want to strengthen that chain? I'm sure there are people in this audience tonight who would love to learn more and also to share their knowledge with others as well. Let us strive to keep that in mind at all times. Now, this is my opinion again, but think about it. If we fail to take care of our own house, It could fall from internal difficulties while we are looking externally. I don't know if you ever thought about that. Something to consider, in my opinion. And you know what my opinion's worth. Now, as we speak along these lines, we might consider something else as well. Now I get to point a finger. Think how long it's been since some of you have taught a class on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday evening. You have talents to share with others, and the knowledge you can gain while teaching is immeasurable. Many of our members do the bulk of our teaching, the various classes. They could use a break, and you could profit by sharing that load. I know it's time-consuming and daunting, but you might be surprised by how much you grow in one quarter of teaching. And let's think about this in a different way. We might have children here who are 5 years old tonight. We might have people here who are 85 years old. The chasm between the two is really wide and deep. But one way, especially I think it's tough for the younger ones to approach some of us old fogies. And I put myself in that category, thank you. Anyway, I think sometimes when we teach, we wind up having not only a pupil-student relationship, but a personal relationship. I've taught classes a few times in the last couple of years, and mainly with the young teenagers. And you know, I feel like you build both of those. You build a personal relationship, and yet you're also teaching. At the same time, I do not stick to the prescribed point one, point two, point three. If we go off on a tangent, if it's a learning moment, so be it. But anyway, think about that, if you will. Think about it when you reflect upon the responsibilities we all share. All right? Another responsibility we share is we need to pray daily. And I know you're going to say, oh, I pray every day. I'm sure we all do that. And it's not up to me to tell anyone how to pray. And what we pray for in our method is not in question here. Peter admonishes us to humble ourselves before the Lord. And in 1 Peter 5:7 on page 134, he says, casting all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. Now, let's go forward a little bit here. Matthew 6, 9 through 13, page 1117, I'm sure you're all familiar with. It contains what some call the model prayer, what some call the Lord's Prayer, and whatever you prefer to call it is okay with me. I'm not going to get into semantics about that. But remember, it contains almost every supplication you can imagine in a few words. What beautiful sentiments are. Just think about it. You know, lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. That's the kingdom power forever and ever. I mean, seriously heavy words there. And things to consider. Now, let me digress for a minute here. I remember back in the 1200s when I was in Boy Scouts. And the prayer we said prior to meals at camp, and even the one that was used at Fillmont Scout Ranch in New Mexico. Give me a minute, I'm going to share those with you. The first one was sung, and it was basically the tune of what some denominations call the doxology, but it was very simple. It said, be present at our table, Lord. Be here and everywhere adored. These mercies bless and grant that we may feast in paradise with thee. Very simple. At Fillmont, it was very simple. It was for food, for raiment, for life, for opportunity, for friendship and fellowship. We thank thee, O Lord. Now, these prayers were learned in a rote manner, but they express important thoughts that are worth remembering. And sadly, I doubt that they're still said in scouts. Probably somebody went to court and stopped that. But I find it interesting that they remain in my memory, but they do. I find their simple meanings were very important even now. And for a once impressionable boy, which I was, they held a great deal of significance. And perhaps part of the reason that I treasure these memories so much is because of the emotions I felt while saying them. Now, if I could go a step further with that, I suppose, and this is me talking, we should all strive to pray with the innocence of a child and the knowledge of an adult rolled into one. Something to think about, I think. Now, our prayers need to be filled with emotion and love. The reverence with which they should be said is extremely important as well. We need to remember those in need in our prayer, give thanks for the blessings we possess, and pray for ourselves as well. We should know that praying for oneself is not selfish, but is essential for our well-being. Finally, we should remember the admonition in 1 Thessalonians 5:17 on page 1359, which reminds us the obvious need to pray without ceasing. Now, along those lines, perhaps something occurs on the spur of the moment. If so, there's certainly nothing wrong with praying about it. You may, feel the need to do so while driving or while working in your yard. When it occurs is not the important consideration here. What is important is that you remember to give thanks or to ask for help when the need seems most pressing. You're not hearing anything new from me here, but just remember how important prayer is in our lives. Another important responsibility is to follow our leaders. 1 Timothy 5:17 on page 1364 says, "Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine." Now I know that we do not have elders as such in our church. We do, however, have men who meet to make the decisions necessary for our members. As a matter of fact, I think we're having a meeting this evening right after service. Whether dealing with monetary matters, security measures, or doctrinal correctness, they labor to make our church as strong as possible. They welcome your input at any time, but also deserve your respect and support in the decisions they make. One of the great dangers we face is lack of support from our members. And I don't mean this church. That's an all-inclusive us, all right? So many congregations have split because of lack of support for their leaders, and we do not ever want to face that sort of situation. As long as we all look forward toward being strong, keeping in mind the big picture, we can grow both spiritually and in numbers. And my advice would be to think about how often discontent and grumbling can lead to disastrous results in every walk of our life, not just here. A strong congregation will meet concerns, solve them, and move to a higher level. If we keep this in mind, the future here could be truly amazing. I'm not quite as cool with this as Kent is. Now, we've adhered to all these responsibilities. We're headed for success in our congregation. Even so, there's more to be done. We must lead an upright moral life. I keep putting this down. Come on, baby. There we go. In Galatians 5:19-21, it's actually on page 1341, one mistake I made. "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanliness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies." Pretty well covers the gamut, wouldn't you say? I think some of them kind of go together to me. Sorcery and heresy to me kind of fit in the same way. But anyhow, there are a lot of things that are mentioned there that we have to be careful and guard against. And I know we all try to live the best lives we can, but again, the fact we are human gets in the way from time to time. We need to keep trying to be the best Christians we possibly can. And we need to help each other to achieve our goal. So, those are some of the responsibilities I see. I know there are others. But that's what I think is important. Come on. Be nice to me. It doesn't like me, so I won't turn another. There you go. All right. Now, as you can see, I'm quite experienced at this. Anyway. Now, and as I told you, it's not going to be a long sermon. But in conclusion, we know that we must shoulder all of these responsibilities and all of them that I've mentioned this evening. I have not spoken of the positive attitude we must maintain at all times. And some of the responsibilities, like going to church regularly, reading the Bible daily, can be done without the true opening of our souls and the strong effort that's really required. And that's up to each of us to look inwardly and say, am I really doing what I need to do? And let's face it, if you go to, when you're at church or when you're reading the Bible, sometimes it's difficult to keep your mind focused just on that one thing. It is for me. I think I was born too soon. If I was born later, they'd have said I was ADD and I would have had all kinds of stuff given to me. But anyway, I never had Ritalin, you know. Instead, I played the trumpet. But anyhow, you know, it's just, it's interesting when we think about all this, because we have to, I can't give the underneath feeling of what we need to do. I can tell you responsibilities we have. I can't infuse you with the enthusiasm that each of you needs. That's up to you. And it's up to you, to others here to help each other, to prop each other up, you know? What's that old song, Build Me Up, you know? And we need to do that. Anyhow, I ask each of you to examine yourselves to see if you fulfill not only the letter of the law with these responsibilities, but the spirit required to make you stronger and your church stronger at the same time. And again, we understand the letter is kind of like, you sound like Laodicea a little bit. Oh yeah, we do what we're supposed to do, but we don't do anything extra. We don't do anything else. And that's something we need to think about, in my opinion. I hope and pray that each of us will resolve to look inwardly to see how we approach our responsibilities. I also hope that we will not be afraid to call upon each other when necessary, so that each of us reaches the highest point potential we possibly can. With these thoughts in mind, if we can be of any help to anyone, if anyone has concerns they need, if anyone would like to come forward for baptism, whatever the case may be, we stand here willing to help you. I thank you very much for your attention. Ask as you rise, as we sing.